It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, after a little bit of hiatus. Hello, Mike.
How you doing, Sean?
I'm all hiatused up. Yeah,
we haven't seen each other for a couple weeks.
Yeah, so you look completely different.
Yeah, you do too.
So we are, we're back. Of course, we are on into deer season, duck season, you know, fall fishing season, all those good things going on.
There's a lot going on right now. Of course, I've been out of town, you've been out of town. I haven't talked to anybody that's been fishing over in the Causeway. I guess it's good. I would think it would be good right
reports,
now.
We had Richard Rutland in with us a few weeks ago, and it was starting to pick up, and he had had some good trips. I've heard some other decent trips north of the Causeway.
Right, that's what we're talking about.
We've got the water temperature down, getting low here in the 60s. So it should be happening. We've had rain, but it's not. I don't think it's knock on wood enough to have shut that stuff down.
I don't think so.
You know, I mean, here's the thing: it can rain a whole bunch. We were talking about this when it came to. Came to a piece of land that a buddy and I lease up still in the river swamp.
Right.
About being able to hunt this land. And I said, you know, we could take a lot more because everything was so dry. We can catch rains and it soaks it up. Plus,
that's right.
All the backwater has to fill up. Not saying that it is not going to be coming up some, but it may not get the same rain if we were already soaked and you get the same rain, the flooding effect.
It's different. Yeah. Totally different. I agree with you. It's been so dry for so long, the ground just sucks it up.
Yes, and so, you know, that gives us, I mean, we can get a couple rains without taking it completely on the chin there, so I think it may help the fact, let me see, let me check this out, Berry Steam Plant, because the number, like the true shutdown number for Causeway fishing has always been, to me, has always been 7,
yeah.
Right? All right, so we're looking at projection at 4.1, okay. So, yeah. And that's coming going with the time.
That's
so
all this rain that we're getting yesterday, today, tomorrow.
Yeah, 4.1. Yeah. So, still doable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a little bit of that the fish are going to go, the saltwater fish are going to go low because the saltwater stays low.
They get deeper. You know,
and,
that's right.
And which brings it into maybe more of the cold weather and the freshwater, more of the, what we call the do-nothing, which is putting grubs on the bottom.
Drifting in the rivers.
Yeah, letting them drag along with the current there versus... You know, bird schools and throwing rattle corks and, you know, voodoo shrimp and all that. So it's a little bit different. But, yeah, we'll kind of got a scenario here that it's better than it has been, at least the reports I got while I was gone in the last couple of years. But that's not saying much, but it's better than it has been.
That's right. So you've been gone.
Yes, okay. I've been gone. Yes,
so
I've been gone.
Tell me where you've been. What you've been doing.
Doing what I do each year, at least for the last 3 or 4, going for the season opener, their gun season opener in Pennsylvania. Go up there. It starts the Saturday after Thanksgiving each year.
Now, I've heard so many stories over the years that Pennsylvania is not the place you want to be on opening day of gun season because every town shuts down. Every person that's got a gun is in the woods hunting.
Yeah.
It's nothing but orange as far as you can see. It's like a sea of orange out there, people hunting. Now, tell me your experience. Of course, so, you're a little different. You're on some private land.
Yeah, we're hunting private lands.
Yeah.
I talked about it with the guys this year. It's still something. I pointed out, and the same crew that went with me last year, I said we did a little over-under bet on how many rifle shots we'd hear in the first hour of the hunt. And just from where we were. And it was significant. It's not as much as in the past. And I think there's a couple things going on. First of all, Pennsylvania probably 10 years ago started putting antler restrictions in. Because, I talked about my late grandfather's barn up there. So my mom's family's from South Central Pennsylvania. And we're all farmers and deer hunters.
Right.
And the racks that were in my grandfather's barn, I think the big one probably now, as a kid, I was like, that's an 8-point. 8-point probably would have scored 80 inches.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Something like that. Maybe 100 inches. That was the big one. The average age of a buck shot in Pennsylvania was a year and a half old.
Sure.
I mean, it was just, and they just hammered down.
And just shot everything that was out there.
And you'd only shoot so many, but there's two different cultures. There's like, in my family, there's a few like real hunters, but they're all deer hunters, if that makes sense. Because they would all go for the first couple of days to kill their deer and get their tag for venison.
Yeah.
You know?
meat.
And, yeah, meat. That's what I'm saying, just to get meat. And also, as farmers, they wanted those deer shot, and they would let other people come shoot, too, because it's, you know, less deer eating their corn and their alfalfa.
Right.
So there were always some hunters in the family, but there were fewer than the people that are just, you know, it's opening day. Let's go get our license. We'll go kill our deer. Yeah. And then they're back to whatever, you know, motocross or whatever they like. I mean, it's just kind of in the culture up there. It's like some places in Alabama that it's hunting by culture. You know, it's not even like I've got family members that hunt opening day, but they don't have there's not a hunting magazine in their house.
Yeah.
You're not watching any shows. They got in their closet, they've got their Carhartt overalls, right? Insulated overalls and a pair of boots and their orange stuff. And once a year they break it out and go kill their deer and then they're done.
Yeah.
Well, what changed is when Pennsylvania put in antler restrictions, so the bulk of the state has to have three on one side. Okay. And then there's area in the western part of the state that have what's called three up. In other words, it has to be three up, not counting the brow time. And that slowed down some of that. And then culturally, I mean, Pennsylvania is still a lot more like Alabama than other states. I've made those comparisons. There's still plenty of hunters. Because I'm going to tell you, in that first hour, I think we stopped counting at 50-something shots that you could hear echoing out through the valley. Now, and mind you, you know, it's a long way, other side of the valley, this mountain, that mountain, boom, boom, boom. But it's something.
Yeah, that's a lot of shots.
Because remember, they have – the season is – started on a Saturday, whatever that was, the 25th, and we'll run through – December 9th, which is a Saturday, except Pennsylvania forever has had no Sunday hunting, right? You couldn't hunt on Sundays in Pennsylvania.
So you get to hunt Saturday, and then you don't hunt Sundays?
It used to be like that. Then a few years ago, they changed the law, so you get now one of the Sundays, and it's the Sunday that was like the 26th, the second day. Like tomorrow, they won't be able to hunt on Sunday. Season's in, but they don't hunt that Sunday. And then it goes through Saturday.
Huh.
So, and then they've allocated these Sundays, like there's one Sunday hunting that they allow during the early bear season and maybe one during like fall turkey or something. Like there's like only like three Sundays they get to hunt, but they allocate them that way. It's just strange. I've got big opinions about that.
A lot of states are different.
It's the dumbest thing. But
you know, they break it up a lot. Yeah.
Well, Pennsylvania, that comes from the churches.
Yeah.
It comes from just legacy there of the churches. They wanted no Sunday hunting and at least times have changed a little bit where they have Sunday hunting. So
the women warned the men in the church because it's such a short period of gun season that the men wasn't going to be there.
No, I talk about this story anecdotally that like my mother, the town she grew up in there, there was no school on deer season. You started on a Monday there, not on the weekend.
Yeah.
And school was shut down. Her high school and everything was shut down on the Monday. There was no school. That's the stories I heard. School day was not – it was like a teacher worked at whatever because they knew nobody would show up.
Yeah.
So
– And the towns were shut down. Is that right?
Well, if you had like a mom-and-pop business, both mom and pop were hunting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they would shut down. Now it's changed a little bit because you have more box stores and those kind of things. But, you know, and there's somebody to staff them. But, yeah, a lot of things were shut down. But a lot of places are making sure they're opening because, you know, last year's stat was like – a little low, but it was like 693,000 deer hunters in the woods on opening day in Pennsylvania. But that's a big deal to the places. My family comes from rural Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So the people travel in from, you know, Philly or Pittsburgh or Washington, D.C. or New Jersey or New York to come into Pennsylvania to hunt. It brings a lot of money in.
They rent
motel rooms. They're at the diners. You know, they're at the, at the sporting goods store, all these things. It's Black Friday on Saturday for them. Well, actually, it probably hits Friday because everybody buys licenses and ammo and the new, you know, blaze orange coat and all those things. So it makes a difference for those businesses. So it's still something. The hunting culture is still something in Pennsylvania. It's still strong. It's not what it was. I remember as a kid when, like, starting the day before, it was nothing but trucks riding the whole valley just out looking. You know, it's a little more sedate now. But yeah, there's still plenty of people hunting up there, and it's, but I do see it changing, and maybe it slowed down some because the casual hunter can't just go shoot the first deer they see.
Yeah.
Oh, you can buy a doe tag, and I bought a doe tag this year, and residents can buy a doe tag, and they'll do some of that. But between CWD worries and having the antler restrictions and culture changing, it has reduced some, you know?
Yeah, because there used to be over a million people, right?
That's right. The latest in 1990, I think, survey, it was over a million. Yeah, imagine that, a million rifles in the woods opening day.
I can't imagine. That's a lot.
Something they do up there, too, that's crazy. So you can't use buckshot. You can't run dogs, can't use buckshot. But they drive. Man drives are a big thing.
With rifles.
With rifles.
Yeah.
So mandrons are definitely part of the culture up there. And some people just do it right off the bat, but usually you'll see in Pennsylvania hunting culture, you sit on the stand in the morning, and when it gets so cold that nobody can stand it, then they get out and do pushes,
yeah.
Right? They man drive, and it's you know using not the whole state's the same, but where we're from, it's mountainous terrain, and deer run certain ways, you know, through saddles, through gaps, and all that stuff. So you put the people on the side of the mountain looking down in the gap, and then the other people go down the road and start pushing through to run the deer. It is a little different, too. We talked about it in years past, talked about it this last trip, too. Where we are, we're open hardwood. I mean, it looks like bottomland swamps, but it's on mountains. It's all hardwood, very few conifers. And then as soon as it levels out enough, it's all ag. Like, so picture, you know, you got mountain comes down to that last bench, and then you have some rolling fields, and those are corn, alfalfa fields. And the deer don't have a lot of thickets to bed in.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. Up north and in the Midwest, your challenge is to have a thicket to get deer in because plenty of food. In the South, we got plenty of places to bed. We just have to provide food.
That's
you
right.
You know, it's like this formula is a little different there. The deer up there bed out in the open. And I've got some video. Hopefully I can get this loaded to the Facebook page. I'll show you some stuff during the break, you know, where deer bed completely open. What they do, though, is they use, just like it reminds me of hunting out west and mule deer, they use topography to their benefit. Usually the wind comes down the mountain in the evening, up the mountain in the morning.
Yeah.
Deer will position where they can smell behind them and
look
in front of them. And usually get right on the edge, right where a bench starts to fall down on a pretty big cliff face. I say cliff face, sorry. Some taper there. That's where they're bedding out in the open.
Yeah.
But they're using their eyes and their nose. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back and we'll go through. Yeah, Pennsylvania. Go join 600 something thousand of your closest friends. Go make a hunt there. It'll be good. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all here. And, so I showed you some video over the break. If I can figure out how to get this to load up and, you know, you take it on your phone and then, but maybe if I can get a corded connection for my phone, we'll put that up. But it's just two things that are interesting there. Number one, I kind of showed you, Mike, in this, where they ended up bedding, but the fact that the bucks are fighting too, the rut is in Pennsylvania, like it is in Kansas and Illinois and all that, is anywhere November 1 through the 8th in there, right?
Right.
To 10, okay. Mm-hmm. So, but because we have so many does there, the difference is, you know, a lot of those places you can hunt, they just don't have a lot of does.
Right.
Pennsylvania gets that same, but it has a lot of does. And
rut goes longer.
And it comes back in. Does that don't get bred in the first cycle.
Yes.
It comes back in. And so you get a little bit, but you got to hit it right. We're a little early this year, but we had good cold weather. And you saw like one doe that was getting pursued. All the rest just standing there. But one was, you know, still hadn't gotten bred in the first cycle.
And it's totally different hunting. I mean, you're in wide open.
Yeah, you're seeing the video. Wide open bottom. Yeah, not bottom. Hardwoods.
Hardwoods. But
mountains.
You can see so far, you know,
can.
And the deer but just lay up in the open.
Yeah, but they use the contour, though. It surprised you how quickly they can disappear and get away from you using contour up there.
Sure.
I mean, you know, three or four big leaps, and then they're down over a ridge face, or they're, you know. And we have some cover on our property where we had trees down from ice storms and tops and all those kind of things. But, yeah, it's generally open. But they use this, they bed, it's just very reminiscent of mule deer hunting them out west. They use the things they have.
Sure.
And, you know, out west, too, you see a lot of shadows. Like the mule deer bucks out there will use a big shadow cast off the mountain, will bed in that shadow. But deer up there will get to where, like in that situation I showed you, it's like from where they were laying down to the next bench, it's like 300 feet of elevation change, 200 maybe, of elevation change. A pain in the butt to get up it, right? So two things. The wind's coming up the mountain in the morning, so they can smell behind them. They turn, they look up the mountain. Now it's open, and they can see everything that could come up, that could come up from above.
Yeah,
they can smell or
behind, hear
anything coming behind them.
Yeah.
And they lay right there. Yeah, so you'll be sitting there, and these stands are in good places. It's where the deer end up. And it's interesting, too, because it's almost like I joked over time, those Field and Stream articles I used to read as a kid that didn't apply to Alabama, they'd say, oh, the deer are feeding here, and here's a transition area, and they're going to bedding here. You know, in Alabama, you're like, yeah, right, okay. Well, the deer are going to go wherever they're going to go.
Yeah, in Alabama, they feed right here, and they go about 20 yards, and they bed up in that big thicket.
Yeah,
right,
and then
there,
they feed over there, and then they feed here, and they come from this direction
that's
and
right,
that direction and the other direction.
Yeah.
Up there it is kind of, even though crews and bucks will surprise you, come from all kind of places. But the general flow, in the mornings, they walk up the mountain to these benches, where the, you know, which a bench is like a flatter area. You know, a mountain's not usually just straight up. It's got a, it rises up, flattens out, rises up, flattens out, you know, until it goes up the top. So they get on those benches. But in the morning, they come up the mountains. You know, they leave the crop fields. And then, and everything's harvested, almost harvested by the time we left, but there's so much residue and corn still in the fields. They go all night. There'll be, you know, a ton of deer out in the fields. And then you go, and honestly, it's, I mean, we take a Polaris Ranger up and get past them and go up the mountain to the second or to the bench or the top bench, get to the top, and wait for those deer to trickle back up. And you just have to be on the right trails that they're coming up. And then they get to those places, like I was showing you, where the stand, and that stand, my family's been hunting that place forever. So stands are in certain places for certain reasons, the way trails are, and ridge, and they end up there about anywhere from 7:30 to 10 o'clock in the morning, and they come up and they eat acorns. Acorns still falling up there. And then they eat some acorns, and they lay down right there in front of you in the open.
So if you get up to, the, let's say, second or third tier, there's basically no deer up there early in the morning.
That's right. You're, like, it is sometimes, I mean, nothing's ever 100%, but there are some times that you – go in and you're running late and you run some deer out. You wonder, you know, were they coming down or coming on their way up, or was that a buck that was, you don't know. But usually, no, you can go up there and there's no deer.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You're walking through these pretty open hardwoods and there's no deer, and you sit down and you just chill out for about 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and then all of a sudden, here they come up.
Man, that's different.
It is different.
Totally
I love
different.
It. I love it. And it's a And it's, you know, there's work to it. I mean, I showed you some pictures, too. I shot a doe on one of the hunts and shot her on a bench, a good generally flat area, where we could have gotten the Polaris to. She ran about 10 yards, and that's all it took, and she slid down a couple hundred feet.
The mountain.
Yeah. And, you know, but I, the, you know how I am. The work is part of the fun for me. So, I mean, I had to gut her on the side
You're
of the
different.
Mountain. I am different. And drag her the whole way down to the base to where we could get a vehicle in to get her. It is different, but it's really fun hunting, and it is different, and some good, you know, good deer. I mean, I doe I shot wasn't particularly huge, and we didn't have a scale there, but she was probably 135 pounds.
Yeah. Gutted or?
No, she would have been on the hoof, probably 135. But there are plenty we saw during the hunt that'd be 160.
Yeah.
165.
That's big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the bucks are, you know, it's everything we could do. My buddy shot a real good deer, 10 point. And it was he and another guy tried to load him, and it was all those two boys could do to do the 1, 2, 3 and get. And they said, I mean, it was like world's strongest man push, scream, get him up in the bed of the thing.
So what would that deer weigh, you think?
And this is rutted down, too. Remind you, they've been rutting. The bucks have been on their feet kind of rutting since mid-October.
Yeah.
That deer was 210, 215.
Yeah.
You know?
Good deer.
He probably was 250 when he started. You know, I mean, they're chunks.
Well, they live on the farm.
They live and they have a combination of corn and alfalfa. Sometimes there's beans in the valley, but mostly we're corn and alfalfa. And then they have hardwoods, and they have all the browse as well. So, they're...
And all the acorns that are falling right now. Yeah.
It's amazing, too, to still be up there each year. This is, you know, I mean, it's go ahead and... It's winter proper. I mean, it was on the way out. We had a little bit of snow the last night, and then we're heading to... They dropped me off at Pittsburgh, and we had pretty good snow. I mean, in the last 2 years, we hadn't had a good snow. Years before that, I had snow 6, 8 inches deep when we're hunting.
Yeah.
So it's wintertime up there, and there's still acorns falling.
Yeah. You see them in the trees.
Yeah, well, I mean, the ones that don't fall on their own, the 5,000 squirrels that inhabit every acre up there, are shaking them out. So, so good hunt. We had a good hunt, brought back a good bit of meat. My buddy, like I said, he shot a good one, and we shot some good ones there. That one's going to be mounted. I mounted one 2 years ago from there. It's not, but I want people to know, I made the joke about, you know, hunt with 690,000 of your closest friends. It's not... It has the potential, and it's starting to produce some really good deer because of limiting. There's no rifle hunting during the main rut. The secondary rut's kind of the angle we get in on, but there's no. It's bow hunting. Like we talked about, the states that produce the biggest bucks do not have rifle hunting during the rut.
That's right. That's right.
Kentucky's the only exception, and they could probably, if they didn't have rifle hunting, they could produce even bigger bucks.
Yeah.
But Pennsylvania has a lot of potential, but they do get pressure. You know, they do get pressure, and...
At least they're putting some limits on it. I mean,
and that
for
changed
years,
a lot.
There was no limits.
It changed. Yeah, there
so,
was a numbers limit.
Like you say, they was
not.
Killing all year and a half old deer just about. They wasn't getting old enough to kill them a good mature deer.
And I've been carrying the good word to my people. We'll see. You know, that's why I try to make sure everybody in my group shoots a big mature buck, because I'm trying to tell my kinfolk up there, like, if you let that one go, you'll watch the deer I let go.
That's right. Nice deer.
Nice deer. Yeah. And I try to let my cousin see that and say, just give them one. Just give them a year.
Yeah.
Give them a year. So it's starting to come up some there.
And then as they get older, they get smarter.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so then, you know, it's harder to kill them.
Yep. So, it was a good trip. Enjoyed it. Ready to get back after it here. All I know is from, being back at the farm and seeing some of it, but watching my cameras while I was gone in Pennsylvania, patches look good.
Yeah, mine's looking good.
I mean, you know, you and I were there at the last minute kind of getting patches in, but looking good.
Mine was 2 weeks old last week, and they're coming up. They're doing great, except for where the hogs rooted them up and ate all the seeds up. But there's still, I didn't see, when 2 weeks ago when I was up there, I didn't see any seed where the hogs had been. They ate every seed, it looked so, like.
But maybe in the process, they were like doing a rototiller. And
that's what must have happened, because there is grass growing where they had tilled up the ground.
Yeah, yes. who needs a tiller?
That's right, when you got hogs. It's unbelievable. But the fields are doing great. You know, and I did something. I put the oats on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I put the wheat on the ground. I did disc it, but I didn't cover it up or anything. And the oats are coming up great, because everybody's worried about, the oats won't come up if you just throw them on the ground.
They
do. They do great. And, the fields look great.
Well, I think one of the dangers, too, is when you come in there, if you know what you're doing, you do it right, you can disc that stuff in. But if you have, your hunting club and you got, Billy over here, and Billy, when he discs them, it puts that seed too deep.
Yeah, no.
Those seeds don't need to be, and that's what throwing mow
is
done.
Let it hit the ground and get some rain on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, but a lot of people come back through and disc them like they're putting in chufas or beans or something, and that's you're going to get a lot of stuff that doesn't germinate.
That's exactly right. It's not going to come up if it's 8 inches in the ground or a foot in the ground.
Yep.
Sometimes you disc, somebody's big old disc, they put it a foot down in the ground.
Right.
Just wasting seed, yeah.
You waste your money. And also, when people put clover in, even if you're going to do all that, put your clover, topsoil your clover afterwards. Don't put it in. They sell clover in mixes, right?
Yeah.
Which is, if you do everything like Mike talked about, it's fine.
Yeah.
But if you're going to try to bury it like you always have, you just wait on the clover, you just wasted your money. Clover could hover about a half an inch over the dirt and put down roots. That's what it wants. It wants to barely just be touching dirt.
That's right. I mean, it's a real small seed. You know, the smaller seed,
One raindrop will bury it as deep as it needs to be.
That's right. Yeah. A perfect thing would have been, I didn't have a cultipacker, but the perfect thing would have been to disc, put the seed out, and just cultipack it. Not go back over it with a disc and try to put the seed in, just cultipack it. And I lightly disc. I didn't do any deep discing. I just lightly disc just to disturb the dirt a little bit, because it was so dry. I just wanted to get turned up a little bit.
Now, I cultivate, the stuff that we don't do throw and mow, we disced and we disced the field, and then we planted no clover yet, but everything else, and then cultivated. Then I come over with the hand seeder, a hand seeder on those, and put the clover in. The fields and put the clover
perfect.
In, and all I do is it just lays on there, and rain hits, and
it's
rocks,
over with.
Rocks and rolls.
That's all you need.
So
it's perfect.
There we go. So hopefully your patches are looking good as well. I've been gone, so I hadn't gotten any duck reports. And duck hunters by nature are like speckled trout fishermen. They don't talk much. So we'll see if we get some duck
information. I'll show you some pictures.
Okay, good. Well, good. We got some good duck information, because there's no backwater anywhere. They probably should be in the marsh.
Yeah.
Be right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We're going to have to get some in-state reports, Mike. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, because if we need y'all, y'all can always hit us up on our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Drop us your pictures there, and hopefully Mike and I will get some Alabama pictures, because I spent time talking about the Pennsylvania trip, which I enjoy. It's a great hunt. And then Mike's been out in Kansas.
Yep.
And you know what makes a Pennsylvania buck look skinny? It's a Kansas buck.
But
chunks out there.
We'll talk Alabama real quick. There's a real good one, Sean. 168 Alabama buck.
Wow.
Michael Eubanks killed.
What a buck.
That looks like a Kansas deer.
It sure as heck does. Is that a 10 point? Looks like it carries.
I think it is. Yeah.
The tines look like fence posts.
Yeah.
I mean, out of his G3 is dang, my goodness. What
so
a buck.
Congratulations, Michael Eubanks. Yeah. That's an awesome deer. Yeah. So, I mean, there's some deer killed in Alabama, a real good one. But there again, you got to be where the food's at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a lot of soybeans and corn around where they're hunting. So that makes a huge difference. You just have to have the food to continually kill big deer in Alabama. And it's no different, you know, just where you are at in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
food's there.
Your food's there. You go to Kansas, where I've been going, and it's just food everywhere. Corn fields, soybean fields, barley fields, as far
right.
as the eye can see. So that's what it takes to grow these big deer. And less pressure.
Yeah.
Less
and
pressure.
And less pressure being, you know, even in states like, you know, you think about Illinois or Pennsylvania, but there's a lot of hunters, but they can't hunt with a rifle during the rut, during the peak rut.
That's right.
And that's a different story.
And they got limits, you know.
Yeah.
One deer. That's it.
Yeah.
You kill your deer, you're gone.
Yeah, that's the thing that people talk to me about who want to go bow hunting with me up there. You get one tag. And so if you kill your buck during, like, I don't have family, you know, not close family members, but the ones in my distant family that really hunt, they'll be like, ah, man, I'm going to go to, you know, I'm going to West Virginia or I'm going to Ohio to deer hunt. And I'm like, why? And they said, well, I killed my buck during bow season. They killed a good buck during bow season. Now that buck tag, they may kill some does back home, but they don't, you don't get one for each, you know, you get one for each year. Kill them archery, then you're done.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, that's a lot more live.
And it depends on what state you go to, too. I mean, some states you can go and buy a tag over the counter.
Mm-hmm.
Just go and buy a tag
now,
and go
hunting. Pennsylvania is over the counter. It's not like Kansas. There's not a lottery.
And I think Illinois, I've been to Illinois twice, and I didn't draw.
I don't think it's a draw state.
No, I think we just bought tags from what I remember. It's been several years back, but we just bought tags. Now, Kansas is a different thing.
Right.
And you got to apply for it in, I think, the end of April, end of May. I can't remember which. But anyway, and you either get drawn or you don't. And
you know,
we didn't get drawn this year. I mean, that's, you know, you got a place to hunt and everything set
you're
up.
Not for
ready,
sure you're going to get a tag.
You're not
tag.
For sure you're going to get a tag.
Well, you know, and I think if you look at lottery states, and there may be some exceptions, but lottery states for deer hunting are going to be places where you have not as many deer, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just like out west for mule deer and elk, they know there can only be, they got to be real careful. There can only be X number of killed out of that area to not overdo it. It's not even at that point about the trophy quality. Some of those units end up having great trophy quality for elk and mule deer because there's just so few killed out of there. And people really take their time because it's hard to get that area.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, it's a population thing. They can only take so many out. And I'd say Kansas got some giant deer and has deer for sure. I've been out there hunting birds
Lots
and seen them.
Lots of deer.
But it's not Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You don't have 100 coming down into a cornfield every night.
No.
You think? Yeah.
No,
yeah. So it's a different. So you could, in Pennsylvania, they're trying to limit the antler heart, you know, trying to get bigger bucks. They'd be happy. Although I talked to them. I'm like, you know, you charge money for a doe tag. If you all want more deer killed, you need to have free doe tag or whatever. But they're trying to limit the harvest of big bucks. But you're not going to shoot out in one season, a 13-day season, you're not going to shoot out all the deer in Pennsylvania. There's no chance.
No, there's not. No.
There's just too much food.
And a lot of people are just shooting to fill the freezer, like you say.
Yeah.
And they don't care whether it's a doe or a buck. And that tag that you get in Pennsylvania, that's for either sex.
No, it's a buck tag.
It's a buck tag.
And then you
got to
buy it. So, or, I know this is probably more than anybody, but then if you go to flintlock season, which is in January, not muzzleloader.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania has a flintlock season, like the old, like Revolutionary War stuff.
Yeah.
And you can buy flintlocks up there because there's a season. Not muzzleloaders.
Yeah.
They're true, like snap, set off the charge, then the explosion.
Snap, crackle, and then
boom.
Bang.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you go watch like The Patriot or one of those movies, those boom guns. You can then take that buck tag and shoot a doe with it, I think, in the flintlock.
Yeah.
You know, on into January. But yeah, that's how they regulate it. But yeah, in some places you get, you know, either or, but Pennsylvania, yeah, your tag is for a buck unless you go into flintlock, and then it can become either or.
But you can buy a doe tag.
Yeah, doe tag. So I'll say it cost me $29. But
yeah.
I've gotten to the point with the farm now. I'm like, I'm sitting here every year, we'll kill bucks. I'm like, we got to kill some does. And There's just more besides. So I'm going to kill one.
But like I say, a lot of people don't want to pay $30 to go kill a doe, you know, if it was.
But I tell you what, that meat from deer that feed
I bet it is
in
good.
Corn and alfalfa and hardwoods all the time and acorns. I bet it tastes better
than the pine straw
It is something. The fat on those deer.
Yeah.
You see a big black belt deer, and they'll get real fat.
That's right.
A two-year-old deer in Pennsylvania has that kind of fat.
Yeah.
You know, going into the winter. I mean,
bet it does.
I mean, you go to get, like, the back straps off or hams. You shave. You're sitting shaving to figure out where to make your cut. You're shaving fat off to get in there to see how to make the cut. I mean, they're that fat. So.
And the taste is just, everybody tells me the taste is totally different. Mm-hmm. Totally different.
It's just, I mean, it still tastes like venison, same thing, but it's just, and I'm a fan of Alabama venison. I eat a bunch of it, but you get a back strap off, like that doe I shot, 140-pound doe, son.
Yeah.
I mean, butter.
Yeah.
Good stuff. You said ducks when we went to the break.
Yeah.
That was ducks in Kansas.
Kansas. I just wanted to show you some pictures of ducks in Kansas. I've
forgotten what they look like.
Yeah. Every pond up there, every pond I rode by up there had mallards in it. Everyone. I mean, just no exception to it. Every one of them had mallards in it. And I showed you a picture of one. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe a 100 or 200, whatever.
I offered to Mike I could help him get those ducks out of there.
So, I mean, there's lots of ducks up there, and I guess maybe they stay up there unless everything freezes over and then they come down. But then again, they've got all these fields up there that's just, you know, been harvested or some of them haven't been harvested. And
they dry feed.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy thing. I think we talked about it with Seth Maddox in the past, and he was kind of scratching his head. He's migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama and duck biologist. That the same mallards, let's not talk about here, and there's a whole thing we get into about the eastern mallards in the east and how much game farm birds are mixed in and all that. Some really good podcasts that have been out there on this. But the fact that, like, ducks are coming down the central flyway that may spill into Arkansas a little bit. These ducks were dry field feeding in Kansas.
Yeah.
Okay? Mallards going in there. Not that it never happens, because I've seen wood ducks in the middle of a field in Alabama dry field, but it's a rare deal.
Yeah.
Those same bunches of ducks, they know because they have tags on the groups that are coming in, they'll dry field feed in Kansas, and they get blown in by a big cold front, get blown in the central or the Mississippi Flyway into Arkansas, and they just don't dry field feed that much. Even though the geese are all in there.
Right.
But they just go to places that have water there. It's strange.
It is strange.
Now, if it was a different group of ducks that never, you know, like here in the east, that never really dry field fed, you say, okay, well, there's no imprinting for that or whatever. But those jokers just were doing it in Iowa.
Yeah.
You know, or eastern Montana or Dakotas. And it's not that it never happens.
So what are they
eating
in the ponds? Is it just grass? Or?
Well, no. Like, well, in Arkansas, they're in rice fields that flooded rice fields, you know, flooded bean fields, flooded timber.
Well, they, like the pond
now they get
I
up
showed.
And walk around. I mean, they'll go to a place that has like a, you know, swag of water in it, land, and then they'll get up and walk around, you know, in the dry and look at it. But you just don't see the number of them in places like Arkansas that you do, like what you're talking about in Kansas. That'll just they roost on water and they go land with their feet dry, in a cornfield and feed on that waste grain, you know.
Well,
I was hoping it would happen in Pennsylvania because we got waste grain everywhere, and the mallards there just stay on the rivers, so I don't know.
Way it goes, man.
Way it goes for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to, as we're talking about duck hunting and getting out there, this went on yesterday. I was out there with Midday Mobile, but it's going on today as well at L&M Marine. This is in Stapleton. Their camo boat show going on. This is at the main L&M store there in Stapleton. It goes today. It's going to be from, I think, 8 to 5 today. Yeah, it's 8 to 5 today. And they'll have games, giveaway, music, food trucks, and the best pricing on the boats in years here. Looking at brands like Excel, Express, Gator Tail. I own, out of that list of three, I own two of those. I own Express and a Gator Tail.
Yeah. Great boats. Great Luna boats.
Great boats, for sure. Those are there, plus the clearance pricing on their model year 23 Skeeter boats, which, you know, Bobby runs that Skeeter.
Yeah.
Berkshires, Avalons, Explorers, and more. So that's going on today, making great deals, and they're wanting to move them out. So you're thinking Santa needs to bring you camo boat, or some that aren't camo. It's a camo boat show going on from 8 to 5 today at L&M Marine in Stapleton. So check that out.
I'm sure they're just like everybody else, getting ready for the 2024 stuff.
That's right.
Yep.
And John Page, when he came on the show with me a couple weeks ago, said that. He's like, from L&M, he said, hey, man, part of this is, like, supply chain is not an issue anymore. He said, you know, we didn't do the show for a couple of years because we're trying to hold on to what we could get.
That's right. Couldn't get enough. Couldn't order enough. He said, it wouldn't come.
He said, well, the dam has burst on that, and the supply chain is coming. The boats are coming. So, yeah, they definitely have to get these models out, you know, to get the new ones in. And it's cool. It's cool to be able to go look at kind of like Delta boats and duck boats and those kind of things and have that kind of selection of like Express, which those boats are fantastic. I've seen Excel, so I've never run them, but I have an Express 16, and I have a 1748 Gator Tail. And both great boats. So
you got a lot of boats.
Yeah, I have some. Speaking of which, I'd like to get the big fiberglass one out too. I hadn't gotten any blue water reports yet, but I see enough pictures of tuna coming in though.
That and wahoo. They're catching wahoo now.
Well, that's good news. We'll talk about that some when we come back on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Borg. Glad to have you all along. And yeah, like you should be ready to take us fishing, huh? Y'all fishing?
I hope so.
Some good tuna pictures I've seen. I hadn't seen anything on the billfish front, but I've seen good tuna pictures. You said wahoo as well.
Wahoo. Right? They're catching a lot of wahoo now. It's time for them to start showing up. And the wahoo is going to be good fishing all the way through the end of May.
But this is a time of year that, and you use these terms, but they come closer.
Yes, they do. They come in.
Well, how
shallow,
close is close? How close is shallow?
They'll come into 60, 70, 80 foot of water.
That is shallow.
Water.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And they're catching some really big tuna, some big tuna, some 200-pound tuna. So it's a great time to go. If you get a day that's 70 degrees, no wind.
Post-front when you have that.
Yep. When you know there's not going to be any bad weather.
Light and variable.
Light and variable. Man.
Which I hate to hunt in light and variable. So it's a good time. If you see light and variable, time to go fishing.
Time to go fishing. Absolutely, man.
So somebody like me with my boat, you know, it's not a big boat, 25 foot, you know, twins, but guy like
that
me
used to be a monster.
I know. Right? I mean, seriously, when I was a kid, if I ever thought I could get a boat that size, you know, it's an older boat, but it's. What do I do to go wahoo fishing? Am I trolling?
Yeah, you're trolling. Trolling around the rigs.
Do I have to troll live baits on downriggers, or can I use artificial?
Use artificials just fine. A lot of people this time of year will use artificial, and you can throw artificial out, loop around a rig once, twice, pull them up. You don't catch anything, go to another rig.
So, I'm kingfishing, do the same?
Like, you're going faster. You know, going
right,
faster.
You're pulling faster, but I'm going to pull the same kind of bait. I mean, would you run like halcos or king getters or dusters or what?
There's all kind of wahoo baits out there. Yeah, but those type baits, crankbait looking baits, yes, is what most people are using. Halcos or the.
And I got some halcos in some crazy colors too.
That's right, and I do too.
And they eat those?
I absolutely love them, yeah.
Okay, but like now, green and orange. And
but there like, again, I go back to like the king mackerel fishing. I think that you're going to catch bigger wahoo if you slow it down a little bit, put you on a live bait, put on a big hardtail, big bluefish, or if you can catch a bonita.
Yeah.
You know.
You putting them down live or are you butterflying?
Oh, no, live.
Okay.
Everything live. Slow down, you're trolling.
Downriggers?
Downriggers and up top, too.
Okay.
So,
because those wahoo will be up top now.
Absolutely, yeah. They've skied on my baits before.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I've had that happen.
Skying.
Yeah, I've had that happen. We'd be trolling, but it seems like we're out in the blue water. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've definitely caught them on top when we've been fishing, but I've never fished them during the wintertime, so I'm kind of trying to pick through the ideas of doing this.
It's really amazing. You when you think of wahoo, you think about deep blue water, beautiful water. That's where you catch them at. But
I'm on somebody else's boat, way out, and we're trolling fast. That's when I've seen them. Yeah,
that's right. But I mean, I've caught them in dingy water. You know, not real dingy, but except one time, me and Mark Kennedy and Tyler Kennedy, and I was fishing by Southwest Pass. And all that river water coming out, it was mud. I mean, it was
right,
just mud.
I've been down there when it's
muddy
like that,
on
yeah.
top. So we threw a bait out, live bait, and we got this fish on, and it fought and fought. Never did run fast or hard, but, it, you know, we all said, man, just cut the line. It's a shark.
A shark, yeah.
It's just,
a,
you know, just cut the line. We wasted about 45 minutes, we thought, till a 99-pound wahoo pulled up.
Holy cow. Can you imagine if somebody would cut the line? You never known, but
you just don't ever know what's down there, you know. But he never had that real long, just zing it run that we thought would, you know, wow, just that little short spurts and then come back.
Because you know what, at 99 pounds, he's just tired moving.
I guess so. You know, so you don't ever know. But that was in muddy, muddy water. And but then again, that's on top, and down below you got clean water and pretty water, and that's where we caught the fish, was on downrigger.
But out of here, but out of here, you're looking. It doesn't have to be like offshore blue water.
No,
I mean
it could be navy
blue,
just pretty green water. That's all, just decent green water. And you remember the Three Sisters that was out there?
Sure.
That was 15 miles out.
Mm-hmm.
I've caught several wahoo.
From right there.
Around the Three Sisters. And there was, what, maybe 900 foot of water or something? Maybe something like that. And maybe not have been that deep. And I know of a lot of wahoo that were caught out there. Of course, those rigs are gone now.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go real far out. You know, you do now just about because you don't have the rigs anymore.
Right.
But you get out in that 80, 90, 100-foot of water, 200, do you think 150, that, whatever, or the rigs.
Do you think they relate with bottom structure the way, you know, kings will get around, there'll be snapper wrecks on the bottom.
Yes.
And you get kings in there bouncing
around.
Wahoo
do the same thing.
So if I had an area that had a bunch of, like, public stuff in it, you know, there's some of those areas where we got pyramid after pyramid.
That's
after,
right.
Would it be worth trolling through
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely. And I've called them off of wrecks.
Okay, so because there's, you know, people know those, like where you, I mean, it's not like when you go from one state pyramid to another, you don't even get on a plane because it's so close.
Sure.
You just go to the next one, like that kind of area to troll through.
Should be fine, absolutely, especially when they're coming in, and they are coming in now. So it's just going to get better as the year goes on. February, March, and April, that's when you want to go. If you can get some decent weather, that's when you want to go water.
But
they're there now.
That's what I was going to say, kids.
They are. They're catching them now, but it even gets better.
Okay.
Gets more of them.
But it, you know, it is worth, I mean, it could happen now, even though we're just getting into December.
Yeah. You know, this is a good time of year normally to go out and catch kings.
Right.
You know, they had the Meat Mayhem tournament out of Biloxi, what was that, 2 weeks ago, I think now, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. They had terrible weather. It was at like 12 to 13-foot seas or
you can
something
have
like
it.
That.
I'm over those
but
days.
Now, they didn't go on those days. They had to cancel a day, and I think it was like 5-foot seas or whatever, and that's still rough. But they didn't catch the kings that they normally do. I think first place was like 47 or 49 pounds, and there was several more 40s, but, you know, even got down in the 30s and the 20s, I think, that won money. So it was a real bad tournament as far as catching kings. I don't know whether part of it was because of the rough weather that they'd had the week before, I don't know, or the few days before. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it just was not. Normally you go out there and catch 60, 70-pound kings this time of year on those tournaments, the national championship and that Meat Mayhem tournaments. If you don't have a 60, 65, 68-pounder, you sometimes won't come in third.
Wow. So, yeah, it's so worth going out there, maybe getting some kings while you're looking for those waters.
That's right.
All right, we'll do it again next week. Remember, check us out online, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on Facebook, and leave us a line there, and we'll see you next week.